love is a guiding force. Love is the thing that's pulling us forward.
Hello, Vicki Robin here, host of What Could Possibly Go Right, a project of Post Carbon Institute. We interview cultural scouts, people who see far and serve the common good, asking them each our one question. In the midst of all that seems to be going awry, what could possibly go right? And my guest today is Anne Stadler. Anne is a co-founder of many community organizations in the Seattle area, including the Third Place Commons, and is a board member of the Compassionate Action Network International. For more than 20 years, she has consulted with organizations and people who want to open space for co-creative leadership and thriving communities. She has also been an award-winning TV producer of documentaries and special programs produced in collaboration with community leaders, and lives in Lake Forest, Washington. I invited Anne to be my guest because she is, for me, a model of the humble servant of the community well-being. She doesn't have a theory of change or a 10-point plan. She comes from what she likes to call the beloved community, seeing what's possible to turn barren spaces like malls or ignored neighborhoods or groups of people that aren't in communication into places of connection and, what she talks about, festival. She's inspired me for decades. I have learned from her about social processes that can help people give their energy and joy to the common good. In private and in public, she is the same inquisitive, honest, and loving human being. So I'm very happy to bring to you my friend, Anne Stadler. Hello, Anne Stadler. Welcome to What Could Possibly Go Right. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you, Vicki.
Yeah. I'm especially glad you agreed to join me for this podcast, in which our guests, who I call cultural scouts, help us to see through the tangle of threats humanity faces and notice what's coming together, even as things seem to be falling apart. You have been an inspiration to me and many other people for decades because you notice possibility and you help us to see how our loving spirits can make a difference. I want to quote a little bit from the David Wagoner poem, just the beginning and end, the one he says, there is a thread you follow. It goes among the things that change, but it doesn't change. Nothing you can do stops time's unfolding, but you don't ever let go of the thread. And I've seen you hold that thread. I have heard you call it beloved community. I have seen it in your promoting open space and promoting public spaces in our region and more. So, Anne, I just, you know, I'm like eager to, you know, whatever you're going to say, to show us this thread you've been holding in the midst of all that seems to be going awry in this world. What could possibly go right?
Wowie zowie. What an opportunity. Well, you know, I think the thread has really been following love and learning what love is, really, over my lifetime. It's certainly been a big learning. I mean, that's very importantly part of the thread. And but my eye has been on love. What is love bringing to us? Because I have felt in my own life that even though things looked very bleak, and they were at different points, there's just been this weird something even before I became conscious of it. My father died when I was 11, and he became ill when I was 7 during the Depression. And it was a really bleak time, I'm sure, for my mom. For us, life continued. As I got older, I asked myself, how could love do that to us? Because I really did remember what a wonderful, you know, thing was happening in our lives when he was alive. I remember I was on an airplane. I got this very clear message. He's in you. Mm-hmm. Why are you asking that question? Find him in you. And it was like, wow, well, of course he's in me. You know, I must have been 40 years old when I finally got that realization. And it wasn't just genetically. It was in little traits, like I'm a good baseball player and I'm a good this and that. Those are from my dad and my mom. This thing, as love as a guiding force, love as the thing that's pulling us forward, that's been a very crucial thread. I've tried different initiatives where we say out loud, my way of opening space is to say, take responsibility for what you love.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't walk away from what you don't love, which is Harrison's. It's take responsibility for what you do love and follow that the whole time that you're living, that you're working with other people. It's create communities where we are offering our gifts to each other, because that's more fun and it's more alive and it's more juicy, more creative. It's the kind of place I want to be in and around, rather than being so focused on what's going wrong that I am only digging the bigger hole down to wrongness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to open up, and I love finding the little initiatives that people have. I wish we philanthropically supported them more. But there are all these little tiny bubbling initiatives that people undertake out of love. And they often are the thing, I learned that when I was a television producer. They are the thing that is changing what is happening among citizens who have a problem. Those little initiatives that somebody did and thought of, and they worked, and they kind of spread, you know, through the telegraph. So anyhow, that's guided me all along. It really has. Yeah.
Yeah. So you talk about beloved community. You know, that was like a, I've heard you talk many times about that. That's your focus. So talk a little bit about, like, what does that mean to you? And where have you seen it emerging?
Well, I saw it right and when I started working in the peace movement in the 60s, and Dr. King was speaking it, saying, talking the words beloved community came from him, really. And we were practicing nonviolence. We were really students of nonviolence. And I'm marvel at what all we learned. I mean, we worked with Gene Sharp. We worked with various people to be nonviolent. And that meant we had to take it in our dailiness, not standing out on the street protesting. It had to be in your daily life that you did things. And that's always been a part of my MO, is if I'm doing anything, it's in my family first and among my neighbors. And it goes out from there rather than it's out there and then it finally comes into my family. Because, boy, your family is the bottom line here, or your dear ones, whoever they are. They'll give you the feedback you need when you're off beam. And, you know, one of the things I think as I grew older, I learned that my mom was always practicing that. I didn't know that's what she was doing. But she was the kind of person who would walk down the street in this small town near Rochester, New York, where she taught school until they finally, I think, kicked her out because she got too old. Mrs. Morgan, how are you doing, Mrs. Morgan? Or she'd stop and she'd say, Jason, pick up that thing you just dropped. You just learned how to... You have to keep the stop littering and stop throwing plastic and stuff like that away. You pick that up. You just learned that in school. Okay, Mrs. Morgan. Okay. It's kind of like she was one of these babushkas, you know,
mm-hmm.
that kind of she knew what was going on, and she was making sure it was. Yeah. So, I mean, I've learned all that from other people and watching them and listening to them and noticing how things get done that you love to be part of.
Right.
I mean, you know, the best times we have at the Whidbey Institute is when we used to have, when we did spirited work, which was an emergent, that's the other crucial thing. We live in an emergent reality. We, you know, once I've said that, it's gone. We live in an emergent reality. We're creating the future all the time, or we're being drawn into it. We're not creating, it's co-created, but we're being drawn into that from the field. We really have to live that way. And following this thread helps us do that. So we don't get stuck someplace because it felt good or because we got trampled on or right. All the reasons why you get stuck.
Yeah. Right. So how do you see love moving out and in amongst these, you know, very large issues?
Well, for one thing, that's the eyes through which I look. I'm not picking up on all of it. I mean, I read, of course, all the terrible stuff that we're... Right. I mean, it could be worse, but not by much. You know, every possible thing we've done wrong is coming crashing together to change. But the I take Karuna News, for instance, the service space guys scour the news to find the little tiny instances of heartful behavior, compassionate behavior. That we are doing all the time. I've talked to Michael Brown, who's running the Civic Commons, to call that to his attention and to say, we need something like that here. So Yes Magazine supplies part of it. There are a wonderful group of people on the Seattle Times now, Naomi Ishisaka and her crew, who supply part of it. You know, they find the stories and they tell them, and we can read them. I run into people. They show up. Oddly, just because I often do like you're doing, just ask them a question. You know, right. What are you doing? What do you love these days? And I get answers. And I think that's probably true of all of us, that if we're following that thread, even moderately, we have this way of, without even saying that's what I'm doing.
Right.
But just our own curiosity.
Right. Yeah, to bring that into daily affairs, even when you're like on serious teams that are working on big issues, to bring that love in, whether it's, you know, the 5 minutes of silence in the beginning, or the, you know, the rituals of love, the protocols of love, because it's one thing to say, oh, the love in our hearts and we're extending it out, but you know, are there rituals that you see or protocols or processes that tend to bring love out in circumstances where there's like a lot of, you know, negativity or hostility or just, you know, our hearts are shut down and we're in our like minds? What do you do there?
I think a lot of us, and I do, light a candle in order to send light, and to be part of light. But that's a ritual. But, you know, often this happens sitting next to somebody waiting for the airplane. And you start talking because you're delayed or whatever. It's amazing the conversations that happen among strangers. Amazing. And I don't know what it is, but I want to go there with people. I don't like surface. I never liked going to cocktail parties or anything like that. It just bores me. It's boring. I want a deep dive
if I'm right. Putting out
anything. and so that's, I think that's pretty crucial. Just don't be shy. Ask the question and let the other person tell you what they want to tell you. But I think those, that's probably the crucial piece is just be curious, don't be shy, and ask the question. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you've done a lot of things that have brought form to love. You know, you've done like the expressions of your love. And like one story I think would be great is to talk about what you did at Third Place Books, you know, that you insisted that there be a commons. And I did insist, I guess.
Yeah, because Ron and I, the owner.
Ron Scher,
who's a wonderful owner of Third Place Books, was not particularly interested in having the community mess around with his business to begin with. And so we had this, thanks to Third Place Commons, which he'd already created, we had this back and forth over lunch. Each of us eating lunch with someone else, but continuing the conversation back and forth. And finally, in the parking lot, I said, well, what are you going to do? I offered to get a little group of the community together for him to talk to and see if there was anything that could possibly work for both of us. And he said, well, let's have the meeting. You get the people and we'll have the meeting. That was
so. What was your vision what were you promoting in this? This was a big bookstore in Bothell, promoting there
in the little town of Lake Forest Park? Don't overshadow us with Bothell, please.
Sorry.
I was promoting that the community take responsibility for the commons.
And what was the commons? It was like an open area, or it was like the food court, or what was it?
It was like a food court, an open area with a stage next to the bookstore. It was a wonderful place. Absolutely changed the whole character of our so-called downtown, which doesn't exist. It's a mall, you know, and it used to be a pretty horrible mall.
Right.
I thought he did too, since there was a stage, to have the community showing itself off to each other and on that stage, kids performing and senior groups and all the rest of it. And so we discussed with him, the owner of the bookstore who was leasing this space, what would work for them and what would work for us? How could we be involved? And we came up with the idea that friends of Third Place Commons, in fact, I remember the idea came from a guy who was in the economics department at the university. And he said, well, why can't you have like friends of KUOW? Why can't we have friends of Third Place Commons? Perfect.
Right.
So we became a nonprofit.
Uh-huh.
We were the ones, friends, that were programming the commons. And by the time we got through, and we did one other thing, which I think is really helpful. We did a model day in the commons to open up our relationship with the commons. From morning until the place closed at night, we had the day all programmed with everything that could go on in the commons, including the Boy Scouts put up a tent and showed how. And I mean, there were people doing things like that because it's a fairly big space, and plus stuff on the stage started, I think, with the third or fourth graders doing marimba from Lake Forest Park School. It ended with either a senior chorus or a high school group singing. And anyways, it was a wonderful day, and it was to show this is us. This is what we could do here. And it really did open up the space. That's another crucial thing, opening up the space. And when we would have issues like the issues about protocol, what do you do in the commons, which included, among other things, what if the kids are necking over on the couch? What are we supposed to do, you know? Because older people, if they knew that you were part of the commons board, might come to you while you're there and say, what are you going to do? You have to go over there and do something about them. And we'd say, no. If you want to speak to them, go ahead.
But, right.
But I mean, all that kind of thing. It you rely on the people who are there, who mm-hmm. showed up, that they're enough to take care of what is needed. If you find that you need something else, finally, you invite them into, but you always have an open door. That's very critical, because the universe knows better than you do what you need. Mm-hmm. So you want that need to be fulfilled by helping it walk in the door.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, those are just, when we did Spirited Work, which was a almost seven year long, every season gathering for 3.5 days, and then we were online. We had a wonderful online environment with Big Mind Media, which we continued our face to face. You could come anytime. You did not have to sign up for a year. And like a whole family came from Pennsylvania one time with their two older boys, high school age kids, for the summer gathering for 3.5 days. And we asked them, well, how did you find out about us? And we were proselytizing anyplace. Well, we don't know, but we just did. And nobody knew anybody who had invited them. But somehow they found us, and they came for that one gathering, and they were great. They turned out to be a lovely match for everybody else who was already there, right. And they loved it. So things like that kept happening, and they do happen if you have that attitude of welcoming the stranger. So welcoming the stranger is a very crucial, aspect of a commons area or a beloved community, an open system where you really actually trust that what is coming in the door and you together can do something that is healthy, life-giving, loving, at least, at the very least, nonviolent.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is, what I'm hearing from you is that there's the thread of love, but there's also the thread of open space, that there are principles to how we conduct our lives in our communities, in our businesses, that there is and I know that it's officially there's principles of open space, but it's like there's principles of welcome. Mm-hmm. Of welcoming the stranger, of you never know who in your midst is going to be the person who says or does or offers the thing that ignites the group. You just never know. And so talk a little bit about gracious space or open space. Don't you use the term gracious space?
No.
No, that was somebody else.
That was the ethical leadership group.
Right.
Because sometimes it's not very gracious.
Right.
To tell you the truth, people get angry with each other. And it's possible in open space to get angry with somebody else. And the nice thing about open space is you can say, sayonara for now, but I'll see you again when I can talk again.
Right. So you can withdraw
from the circumstances. You let your feet carry you or your intention carry you to where love is taking you. And if it's not, if you don't feel a sense of that. What you feel is anger and, unresolved conflict. You may not deal with it till even the next time that you get together. But you don't let it go. That person is not cast out from your little circle, whoever right. the provoker is. That person is welcome, or you're welcome. If you're the one that's provoking the anger, you can come back in.
Right.
Yeah. And there is this, I think the other thing that we learned, which I just am realizing is so important, especially we learned it in spirited work, because we were taught it. Early on in spirited work, maybe the second year, I got a clear message. And that was, whatever you knew, thought you knew about community, throw it out the window. You are being taught. Community is. So listen and pay attention. And out of this, because I had been a community organizer for 10 years, I thought I knew a lot about this. Out of this came a group of stewards. And the way it happened was, we opened the space to tell people, if you want to be part of, join us four initiators, join us, you can do so. But the requirement is you do commit to a year if you're a steward, and you also have some kind of a spiritual practice. It doesn't matter what it is, but some kind of a practice. And so people signed up, and we had a group of stewards from then on, and they usually numbered about 10 or 12, and we met monthly, and we were the ones that ran the gathering. And what we learned, in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday about this. We learned how to deal with conflict. What we did was, if there were conflict arose, we saw it as an opening to what wanted to emerge. And so when there was an opening there, we shut up and listened for about a minute or 2 minutes. And I mean, it became a ding on a bell. We listened for about 2 minutes, and somebody would get the idea. Oh, it's this. Right. We let the field come in to teach us.
Right.
And that arose out of a collective experience. And so I have had a training, we all did, in the wisdom of the collective circle, not the individual, but the collective circle. And I think that is where we're headed now in our whole concept of leadership with, not leadership over, power with, not power over. And I pay attention to that in every group that I'm in. That's why I open space. Yeah.
Right. Right. And so if you're willing, let's dial this up to, whether it's state or national politics. These are the places where it seems like the most stuck. And how does love enter? What are the vectors for love entering people who are making, consequential decisions? And I know that, I got stuck in anger, during, the last presidency, just like, I felt powerless about protecting things that I loved. Mm-hmm. And so I just wonder, do you have examples of how love, this kind of letting the field speak to you, letting what what wants to emerge, emerge. You know, where you've seen that operating, even, you know, your focus has been City of Seattle, you know, in Seattle, where have you seen that?
It's a good question. That's a difficult, very difficult arena. And it's been, my answer has been, don't work there.
Right.
My answer has been work with the citizens and the non-citizens, the people who are here because they have to be here, the undocumented, the people who are here, people who live here. Work with them. Because they are the ones that, and corporations who are have foundations and are trying to learn something. They have also ways in to change what they do. And so that is primarily what I have actually done. But living in Lake Forest Park, I don't treat my city council people any differently than I treat my neighbors. I call them up and I tell them what I think. Or I invite them out for coffee and ask them what they think. And how can we work on such and such? And I mean, I think I'm probably... I'm not like my mother in that regard, but like I've had a bee in my bonnet about affordable housing and that we need it here as well as all around the King County and the region, and so I've worked both with other citizens who care about the same thing, and I have talked with several city council people. And I know who is interested in that, and former city council people, and who is, you know, who then I can and we can make common cause with. So I do that. So I guess I don't know what to tell you about the federal system. I think it is difficult to have a relationship of that sort,
right?
Even with, you know, a progressive representative like Premila Jayapal, who I think is wonderful, and I think her motivations are wonderful. I've never tried to have a relationship with her, and I don't contribute money to politics except in small doses. My money goes, if whatever there is, to nonprofits and citizen activity.
Right.
So I don't have any particular clout for you know, anybody in that at that level of interest. But you know, I see women, and it's a lot of this is coming from women internationally, in the climate change arenas, in economics and and other realms, they're the leaders in this now, and I totally agree with what they're doing, and they seem to have talked with each other.
Right.
I mean, it's not just me that's doing this. You know, there's a whole lot of us who are doing all this.
Totally. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I pay attention a lot, I think, to that. Yeah.
Yeah, you pay attention to where, you know, whether or not you're going to impact it, you pay attention to where love is emerging.
Yeah.
And maybe you congratulate people, or you just add energy to it, or whatever.
You connect somehow. You help them connect. Somehow. You connect with them. Yeah. 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 And if I'd done anything probably in terms of that sort of thing, probably. It's not about my celebrity or anything like that at all, because I am not, nobody knows, I'm not well known for anything, but I am a connector, and I don't hesitate to do that, to say, call so-and-so and pay attention to who would possibly be able to be working together, and often they do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So that's a piece of it, is to be a connector. And I think that's part of what could possibly go right. I think it's part of like the whole attitude, because what could possibly go right is not just about the things that are emerging out there. It is, how are we in this world, mm-hmm. noticing the things that are going right, noticing the sprouts, watering them, drawing attention, convening groups. This is an activity. It is sort of counterintuitive when we're so upset about things that are happening and we want to oppose the forces that are doing the destruction. But I think it's, what you're giving us is a sense of that in small ways, in our families, our neighborhoods, in our communities, this process of coming from love, noticing what's emerging, watering it with your attention, drawing people together, if there is something that needs to be created, not assuming that you'll create it, just bring together a team and let the team create it. It is a way of citizening that, it's a way of being a citizen or a force for love in the world. And it may seem small. I work locally in my community. I live in a little town of 1,000 people, a wonderful people. And I think I operate somewhat like you operate there, noticing what's emerging, getting a bee in my bonnet. I have the same bee around affordable housing, mm-hmm. and just like poking around, there's like a little sort of poking around thing. I think a lot of us do this. I think mm-hmm. a lot of us do this and we don't lift it up. We don't say that's important, and it's almost like this is what keeps the world together. This is these people who are connectors and people who are noticers and people who water the things that are emerging.
And who are weavers, because these connectors mm-hmm. are weavers of a new cloth, basically.
Right.
And, the cloth that just hasn't formed yet because of it's just threads out here.
Right.
Us following the threads. And this is probably, this is really interesting. This is probably one reason why the plethora of circles has arisen, is the need for that kind of experience, whether it's cancer circles or food doing circles or whatever. And I mean, it's so interesting. Somebody was asking me the other day, they were remarking on how wonderful PCC is. And I said, yeah, we were part of the buying club in our neighborhood that mm-hmm. started PCC. And a buying club, what was that? Well, it was a circle that went down and got right. grain and cheese to Pike Street Market once every 2 weeks or something and ordered it. And then we took turns cutting it up and parceling it out for our neighbors, and
right.
they bought it. And that turned into PCC. Wow. That's how things work. That is how right. we work as human beings. So let's just right. keep doing it more.
Right. Yeah. Right. 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 Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Feel something in your heart, gather people around the question, listen carefully for what's emerging.
Yeah.
Do the legwork, go down and get the cheese from Pike Place Market. Do the legwork and do it in a spirit of like adventure and conviviality and see what comes. I think it's, we should all have a list, like at least a part of where we put our energy and attention. That is that sort of cultivation of possibility locally, not just locally physically, but, among real people in real places.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is be sure you have some good food and be sure you have some music. So tell everybody to bring their instruments and make it a potluck or whatever, put out right. something so that we have all the stuff that reminds us how juicy life is.
Right.
I know that was hugely important the whole time we were developing World Without War Council, decade that we were developing World Without War Council, we always did that kind of stuff. And we didn't just do it to raise money. We did it because it was fun.
Right.
And yeah. And I think that that's another thing, you know. I don't know you, how you are. I am so tired of being invited to contribute to. People can't thank you without asking you for more money. And it just drives me nuts. I mean, I feel like, what do they think I am? Or we are? We want to be part of something. Can't we be part of something more than just handing them a check?
Right, right. Yeah. I think that's so important, because it's like, there's an epidemic of loneliness. I mean, yeah. People feel excluded from the common life.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't have the money, or they're because of the money age, you know, appearance, mobility, whatever the issues. And I think there's a lot of the movements that are claiming like belonging, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
As awkward as it sometimes is, you know, to cut through the narratives, you know, what they're saying is, we are part of the commons.
Mm-hmm.
We are part of what makes this world, this world.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, and I think that's the spirit of what you have been doing for years. You know, you are part of whoever shows up are the right people. You are the ones that are making this. Mm-hmm. With your curiosity and your love and your participation, you're mm-hmm. making, I'm getting like something from what you're saying. It's like, we are weaving the fabric now. This is not in the past. These are projects that I've done as a weaver, but we mm-hmm. are weaving it now.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast is part of the weave. And we don't have to stay like, totally positive about things. There are mm-hmm. things that are conflictual, and we can be in conflict,
mm-hmm.
but it's that consciousness of, we are part of a weave, and if we don't bring our thread, it's missing,
mm-hmm.
you know? So,
true.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, that's what, at least what I'm pulling out of what you've been saying. Is there anything else you want to say, you know,
I want to thank you. I really would like to thank you. That's the only other thing I'd like to say, because I think that your question, however, 4 years ago, did you say you started this?
Yeah, this is the fourth season. It was 3 years. It's 2020 we started.
Okay. Yeah. What could possibly go right? That was exactly the right question.
Mm.
I think what you've done is very, very, very important.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and it is the spirit that you're talking about. It's the inquiry together
mm-hmm.
about what we are noticing that we can, through our attention, you know, mm-hmm. give more form to.
Yes.
And that's, I think, what the people listen to this podcast, you know, or watch the videos, that's what they derive. It's like, they feel like, we all feel like we're chewing on something together. And it's not like a fixed world out there that you get to like either, you know, say yes or no to like column A or column B. It's that participation.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you so much for evoking how you are in the world. That's what I wanted people to experience. That thank is you. A true blue, you know, radiant, loving being. So thank you so much, Anne, for joining me in this conversation.
Thank you, Vicki, so much for asking.
Hey, thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review so that this hopeful message can get out to more people. Check out Post Carbon Institute's Resilience website for show notes and for more guest information. Thanks also to Asher Miller, Amy Buringrud, and Clara Winter of Post Carbon Institute, plus production assistant Michelle Wigg from frugalityandfreedom.com.